Hello, everyone. In light of our having to postpone our in-person ILS NYC 2022 conference this year because of the pandemic, we've now pushed it back to April the 22nd, and you can still visit the Artemis website and get tickets for that event. But we wanted to showcase our kind sponsors, give them an opportunity to explain some of their strategies and put some thought leadership out there, and also we wanted to thank them for their support. So for this video, I'm delighted to welcome Stefan Ruoff, the Global Head of InsuranceLink Securities, and Mark Gibson, Head of Products and Solutions ILS, both from specialist investment manager Schroders Capital, one of our gold sponsors of the conference. Welcome, both of you. It's great to see you today.
Thanks. Good to see you
Thanks,
too.
Steve. Good to see
So,
you, Ed.
as ever, we're looking at the development of the insurance-linked securities market with an eye to the future. And Schroders Capital is obviously a very significant player in the ILS space, more than 4 billion of assets under management. And I thought it would be interesting to hear how the company is responding to recent challenges the market has faced and also preparing for future growth, because we continue to see appetite from the investor base. So to begin, Stefan, I thought perhaps you could give our viewers a bit of background into the Schroders thesis for ILS investing. Why should investors consider ILS and insurance-linked assets for their portfolios?
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and hello to everybody again. The investment thesis for us hasn't changed over the past years at all, actually. I think first and foremost, the fundamental strength of the asset class remain. It's an uncorrelated asset class that provides investors with decorrelated return. But secondly, and I think this is quite important in the current situation that we're facing, the ILS asset class is inflation shielded to some extent, as it's based on a floating rate product, which means inflation can not, let's say, filter through to a very, very large extent. Thirdly, I think the non-correlated characteristics of the asset class are important in the way as you're investing in insurance risk, and pure play insurance risk by nature are natural catastrophes or risks that are man-made, which means they are not interacting with financial risks at all. So that means the fundamental strength of the asset class obviously do remain. But over the past few years, we can probably add another strength of the asset class, that is liquidity. And I think it's not just the liquidity per se, which you find obviously in a cat bond product, but it's the range of liquidity that can be provided through ILS investment. It can be from a very liquid product to an illiquid product, covering a broad range of investment needs, and to some extent replacing fixed income whenever it's possible. So I stop here, but I think the thesis remains strong, right?
Thank you, Stefan. Yes, and it's good to hear that actually asset classes often change their thesis to suit the market, don't they? But ILS is one where it's the real sort of shining points of an ILS investment seem to come out when markets are under stress, particularly. And the inflation factor is obviously an interesting one, and the fact these are floating rates. So, Mark, moving across to you, perhaps you could comment on some of the challenges that we've seen, but also explain why that doesn't change the overall investment thesis.
Sure, I'll have a go. Broadly speaking, I think the principal challenge that we're seeing is that the last few years have seen frequency and severity claims which have led to less than attractive, less than stellar results. Let's just put it like that. And of course, when you add the pandemic and the potential impact of that, or the actual impact on that, depending on what strategy you're looking at, that clearly hasn't been a helpful addition to the picture. So really, we're dealing with a scenario in which we're in a period of a number of years of less than attractive returns. I suppose that has also led to a certain amount of contagion from some really poor performance or even exit from a manager or two. So that's not helpful when you're talking to investors who are aware of what's going on in the market. The impact of climate change, this is in no particular order, by the way, but the impact of climate change clearly is something which is a topic for discussion and debate. It's an area of focus for investors when we talk to them. I'm no expert in this, but broadly speaking, some experts think that there is a link between the recent trends that we're seeing and climate change. And it's hard maybe to argue with that, but it leads to questions about whether or not the industry, the insurance and ILS industries are able to react quickly enough to deal with that impact. So there's a challenging of the risk analysis capabilities within the insurance and the ILS markets. But the ILS market is still a valid and necessary part of the risk transfer arena. It's still an extra source of risk-bearing capital, and it's able to be accessed by educated investors who are interested in, as Stefan said, a diversifying investment, which also is fairly priced or should be fairly priced over the medium to long term. In terms of going forward, global exposures are going to continue to grow with increased development across risk-exposed territories, both in developed and less developed countries. The nature of risk may continue to evolve due to the impact of climate change. So there's going to be continued need for people to take risk and to assess risk and try and price for it properly. The other area I think of focus is the protection gap, the difference between economic losses and insured losses. I think that this is a major opportunity for growth, not just in developing countries. And I think that growth will be catered for both by insurance company balance sheets and ILS funds. So that's how I see it.
Yeah, that's a really good point about the protection gap as well, because when we think of insurance penetration in some parts of the world, alongside some of the challenges you cited around frequency and types of events and climate risk, it all shouts out that we need more risk transfer. And obviously the ILS market will continue to try to provide at least a portion of that going forwards. So Stefan, the investment thesis remains clear. Reasons that ILS should prove attractive haven't changed. But what about the growth potential for the market? I mean, Mark touched on some of the areas that might drive some growth, but what has to be done to ensure that opportunities can be capitalized on?
Right. I think there are, again, two fundamental areas I think one needs to address. I think if you look at some studies in the market, you see that growth is going to be expected for the next 5 to 6 years, as Mark explained, and that growth might not be as strong as it's been over the last 10 years, but still, I think it's going to be quite significant. Now, I think what's even more important for us, and that goes to the two fundamentals, this is what do our investors expect, and what should we be doing as an investment manager to make it happen? And the first, I think, fundamental is we need to create predictable outcomes. I think we have not as an industry done too well over the last 5 years in creating predictable outcomes. And I think we need to change that and come back to things like underwriting, structuring, analytics, and have these properly set so that our investors can rely on these predictable outcomes. The second fundamental, and I think that's probably the brighter one, that is, how do we make the asset class more accessible and more widely accessible? And that can go different ways. It can go one way, and we've seen this in the recent times, actually, with almost democratization of the asset class through, let's say, intermediated products such as UCITS funds. And we've seen strong growth there, which shows there's interest in the asset class, in the strength of the asset class, and the vehicle chosen allows also a larger investor group to access. Now, but this can also go the other direction in creating investable products that offer access to risk, which today is probably not offered. And that can be closed-ended structures, it can range to life ILS and other risks that are transferred into the market, however, it, always on the basis of predictable outcomes. That's probably how I'd say create predictable outcomes and make the asset class accessible to a wider range of investors.
Great. Thank you, Stefan. Yeah, that speaks to one of the themes of the conference in April around differentiation as well. It's really important that the asset class can offer more than just the historical standard of cat bonds and other property catastrophe risks. So I'm looking forward to seeing it expand in that way. Mark, turning back to you, what are you doing at Schroders Capital in order to best prepare yourselves for the future and to ensure you can meet investors' demands, which are also likely to evolve over time?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a quite a broad question. But you know, we're determined to be a leading manager of ILS capital, and we intend to grow our share of the market as it grows. So that's our objective, and we feel that we're going to do that by, as Stefan alluded to, by broadening the activities in which we're engaged. What does that mean? Well, it means providing diverse investment product or strategy for investors to tap into. We have a range of funds already, but we intend to keep broadening that range of funds so that there's choice. It could be risk reward, it could be types of investments, and so on. It could be liquid, illiquid. We're also happy to do separate bespoke mandates. So it's really making a net which is nice and wide to capture the interest of investors in insurance linked securities. And of course, within those strategies, we can have diverse underlying risk. So most of what we do and most of what most people in the ILS market do is focus on natural catastrophe risk, but there are other non-life risks, such as the so-called specialty insurance market, which can be accessed different ways, but one of the ways to access it is via Lloyd's, for example. We are active in the life market and have been for a long time. We're probably one of the leading entities in that market, and we look to continue to grow that. And then there's the runoff market, which of course is a vast, vast market. And there must be ways in which we can participate in that market as well. So it's just really by broadening the range of options that are being offered to our clients. And then behind that and underlying it all is the fact that we need to demonstrate responsibility in our investment activities. And I'm sort of alluding to the sustainability and impact arena, or ESG, or whatever people prefer to refer to it as. That's just something that is something which is of great importance to Schroders generally. And we are also taking that seriously from the ILS perspective. So in our current structures, we have obtained SFDR Article 8 on one of our funds. We're in the process of obtaining it for two more of our funds, and it won't stop there. We'll carry on challenging ourselves to make sure that the criteria that we're monitoring to achieve those accreditations are relevant, that we are scoring them properly, and so on and so forth, and that we adhere to those constraints in our investment activities. And if there's demand from investors, we will also consider going to an Article 9 fund. So yeah, there's plenty of development in the next 12, 24 months.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And obviously the ESG focus is critical at the moment, really, with the way the world is going and the way investor motivations are moving as well. So that's really positive to hear. And congratulations on getting accreditation for your fund as well. And look forward to seeing some more getting accredited too. Stefan, you mentioned predictable outcomes, and this is going to be another theme at our conference later this year. Perhaps you could discuss some of the more technical aspects of how an ILS manager could seek to achieve this.
Yeah, happy to do so. Although I think it's not hugely sophisticated what I'm going to say, because it goes back to proper underwriting. It goes back to stringent modeling, and it goes back to structuring in a way that the outcomes are predictable. But probably to look at it a bit more closely, though, one thing I think ILS managers need to do is to model the entire lifespan of a given instrument. I think cash flow modeling is an essential part of a predictable outcome, and it can't stop just to model an expected loss of a given risk, because the instrument lives probably much longer than just the risk period. And I think that's a fundamental piece to be taken into consideration. The other important element in creating predictable outcomes is to make sure that we do address a changing risk environment, and we take into account parameters that do describe the changing risk appropriately. And here we can mention inflation. Inflation has become a virulent theme, and we need to price in inflation in the right way as we speak. But then obviously we have changing risk environments. We see industry exposure changing almost on an annual basis. Look at California, which is a very good example, with the wildfire risk, which has been differently managed today as it's been managed probably 4 or 5 years ago. So these changes need to take fall in place in modeling. So these are just examples when I say stringent underwriting and modeling. But then beyond that, obviously, the modeling itself is improving. And many people question, what is the model accuracy that we see with climate change, a changing risk environment, and so on? And I think that discussion misses the point a little bit. Models can only be as good as the computing power is, but computing power has been increasing dramatically over the last decades. So, and risk models do become better. However, risk models have to be put into context. And that's what I was saying earlier. You need to take into consideration what's the moving risk environment together with the risk models that are available. And you can only do that with sophisticated people that are with you. That means actuaries, scientists. And I would claim that a successful ILS manager of tomorrow will be one that is able to be on top of scientific development, be able to deploy computing power, and has an edge in analytical skills.
Yeah, those are really good points, actually, Stefan, because while we all get very, very focused on technology and the shiny things that come through in the insurtech world, there's actually applying scientific rigor alongside technology, and that's what really will help us understand risk far, far better into the future. So great to hear that you guys are building out a platform that will support that. Finally, Mark, I thought I'd ask you about how the business of ILS management faces off to the traditional reinsurance market. So market cycles still define a lot of the business that you guys do. But what's important and what can differentiate you in your, I guess this is asking about relationships as well.
Yeah, it's another question which has plenty of scope for a long answer. I'll try and keep it relatively short. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a question of facing off to the insurance market. I really feel that the ILS market is part of the risk transfer market globally, and it'll continue to play its role. So, and that's partly because reinsurance capital is not limitless, and that's slightly alluded to by the concept of the cycle. What causes the cycle? It's capital effectively coming in or being taken off the table as a result of pricing and loss trends. The reinsurance market cycle hasn't gone away. I feel that there was commentary a few years ago that maybe it had, but I think demonstrably it hasn't. And all of those involved in the risk transfer market need to be aware of the cycle and where we stand at any moment. But having said that, I think the shape of the cycle may change, and there are reasons for this, such as changes in underlying risk, some of the changes that Stefan referred to, changes in exposures, speed of responsiveness of capital, changes in risk analysis. These too have an impact on the shape of the cycle. So I think managers will have to continue to differentiate themselves to cater for that. And I think the areas in which they'll have to do that are in having a track record. I don't think the track record necessarily means it always has to be positive. There are going to be periods in which there are going to be poor years. But most importantly, the performance that managers deliver has to be in line with expectations. And that effectively comes down to education of investors as to the nature of the risk, the nature of the strategy. All of that needs to be very, very transparent. There also needs to be transparency in reporting, i.e. Frequent reporting. The content needs to be helpful to investors. Providing timely and fair valuations, I think, is really, really critical. That's one of the most critical areas that we believe exists. But again, having a broad range of experience in the team, as Stefan referred to, good insurance people, good risk and analysis capabilities, having multiple strategies, as I talked about earlier on, to attract investors. Being independent in risk selection and management, I think, is something we haven't touched on. It's quite an important topic. And then I think finally, being active and engaged in with multiple counterparties in both insurance and in the investor community. In the insurance market, you need to be out there a lot to ensure good access to the business. But in the investment market, we need to be very active traders, to be aware of where things are going and trends, and to match capital and risk. So that's a very quick run through a whole load of areas, which I think hopefully address your question.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Mark. And actually, that also really, really succinctly explains just how complex the job of ILS fund management can be as well. I think it's often overlooked just how many people provide input into decision making at an ILS fund such as yourselves. So look, thank you very much, both of you, for your time today. I really appreciate you spending some time to discuss what's going on at Schroders Capital and your vision for ILS management. It's great to see you, and I look forward to seeing you in person in April at the conference as well. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good one.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.